This is Toby Sumter with your CrossPolitik Daily News Brief for Tuesday, June 9th, 2020. Today's news brief, you will hear who has been charged for the murder of retired St. Louis Police Captain David Dorn, how the New York Times arranged for the resignation of an opinion editor for publishing the opinions of a sitting Republican senator from Arkansas, and Minneapolis City Council announces it will disband the Minneapolis City Police Department. First up, KMOV reports a man has been charged with the murder of retired St. Louis Police Captain David Dorn 5 days after a handful of looters broke into a pawn shop in North St. Louis and ended the night with a tragic loss to the St. Louis community. Officials with the St. Louis Circuit Attorney's Office said 24-year-old Stephen Cannon was charged with first-degree murder for the death of Dorn. The shooting happened at Lee's Pawn and Jewelry on June 2nd after a night of looting and violent rioting in St. Louis. Police said Dorn was found shot multiple times. Dorn was murdered by looters at a pawn shop. He was the type of brother that would have given his life to save them if he had to, the Ethical Society of Police of St. Louis wrote after the murder. Violence is not the answer, whether it's a citizen or officer. Cannon was also charged with robbery, burglary, armed criminal action, and unlawful possession of a firearm. According to charging documents, Cannon and other people can be seen on surveillance video leaving a Pontiac G6 just outside the pawn shop and then going in the store and grabbing several televisions. At some point, Cannon was the only one standing at a corner outside the store, and then Dorn arrived. Police said video shows Cannon pointing the gun at Dorn, and then Dorn is seen falling to the ground. Witnesses told police someone yelled to the people inside the store and told them it's time to leave after shots were fired. Police found several 9mm shell casings at the corner. Cannon, the driver, and another person got inside the G6 and left the area. Police said Cannon admitted he cut his hair to change his appearance after seeing surveillance video released by police. An eyewitness identified Cannon to police, and officers found a television taken from the pawn shop at his home at the time of his arrest. Police said Cannon has a criminal history and is a felon. David Dorn was a fine captain. Many of us young officers looked up to him, St. Louis Police Chief John Hayden said. Dorn spent 38 years with the St. Louis Metropolitan Police Department before becoming the police chief in Moline Acres. The St. Louis Circuit Attorney's Office said no bond was allowed. Circuit Attorney Kimberly Gardner said her office began an extensive investigation, and with collaboration with the police department and the outraged community, we have issued charges for the tragic murder of former Captain David Dorn. Officers also arrested 27-year-old Jimmy Robinson. He was charged with burglary, armed criminal action, and stealing. His bond was set at $30,000, cash only. What the news story doesn't say is that both suspects charged are black men. Does that matter? Well, yes and no. On the one hand, it doesn't matter at all, because sin doesn't discriminate between melanin levels. But it sort of does matter, since the media and certain culture manipulators seem to care when white cops abuse their authority, killing people with less melanin in their skin. Now, is there a history of violence and prejudice among whites against blacks? Yes, in many places in our country, and it needs to be fought and justice needs to be done. But is there any history of violence and bloodshed among blacks? Absolutely. As in this case, where a riot, supposedly, against violence against black people, ends up with violence against a black police captain. The point being that despite real racial animosity in some quarters, the deeper problem is the race of Adam and sin that runs in every man's veins. That afflicts all nations and tribes and is an equal opportunity offender. And only the blood of Christ can heal these wounds. Speaking of which, have you signed up for our first annual Fight Laugh Feast conference in Nashville? It's in October, 1st through the 3rd. Rowdy Christian Media meets the conference world, not for the faint of heart. We will kick the whole thing off with beer and psalm singing the first night, followed by a slate of speakers committed to driving the nails of the gospel into all of life, including Douglas Wilson, George Grant, Rod Martin, Glenn Sunshine, yours truly, and more. The conference will conclude with a massive Fight Laugh Feast Network mashup with representatives from all your favorite shows, all on one show. fighting, laughing, and feasting, and then we really will feast together with food trucks bringing in dinner to close out the conference. So please join us October 1st to the 3rd as we build a rowdy Christian culture for God's glory and our good. Go to fightlaughfeast.com and register now. Next up, what's the opposite of rowdy Christian media? The New York Times. The New York Times announced on Sunday that its editorial page editor had resigned after backlash from the public and the company's own employees over what? A Republican's opinion. It was a Republican, senator's op-ed that called for using military force against recent rioters. The Wednesday opinion piece by Senator Tom Cotton, a Republican from Arkansas, titled "Send the Troops In," advocated for deploying the military for riots. The senator described looting in New York City as, quote, "carnivals for the thrill-seeking rich, as well as other criminal elements," unquote, and wrote the leftist Antifa movement had infiltrated protest marches, which an earlier Times article had called misinformation. Oh, really? Nobody's infiltrated the protests at all. All the peaceful protests that turned violent just did that. And the bricks that showed up on various, you know, street corners was just purely an accident. Gotcha. The column immediately drew backlash, with dozens of Times journalists' voices voicing their opposition, tweeting the headline, caption, in the form of the phrase, "Running this puts black New York Times staff in danger." Nicole Hannah-Jones, who recently won a Pulitzer Prize for the 1619 Project, which examines the legacy of slavery in America, which also, it doesn't just examine the legacy of slavery in America, it makes up all kinds of nonsense about the legacy of slavery. Okay, that's enough. Anyways, she tweeted, "I'll probably get in trouble for this, but to not say something would be immoral." Huh. Where'd you get the moral? I want to know by what standard. Okay. Anyway, she continues. This is still her tweeting. "As a black woman, as a journalist, I am deeply ashamed that we ran this." Nicole Hannah-Jones was also recently in the news arguing that it isn't violence if vandalism is committed against property that can be replaced. In fact, we covered this on the last Sunday special with Cross Politic. "It isn't violence if vandalism is committed against property that can be replaced," she claimed. So one wonders, how does publishing someone's opinion put anybody in danger? It certainly can't be violence, can it? Rod Dreher pointed out that this same newspaper published a book review that fantasized about assassinating President Trump. Nobody resigned, as far as I know. It published a book review about a book fantasizing about assassinating President Trump. Did anybody feel, I mean, that, does any double standard much? The New York Times publisher insisted in a statement that this was not a signal that the paper was narrowing opinions allowed to be published, which Dreher called, and I quote, "total horse pucky." Okay, he said it a little bit more Anglo-Saxon than that. Both Sulzberger and Bennett first defended the decision to run the column. Bennett wrote in an essay that debating influential ideas openly rather than letting them go unchallenged is far more likely to help society reach the right answers. Well, that seems reasonable. But on Thursday evening, the Times reversed itself and said the column had not met editorial standards. That's funny. The Times reported that Bennett said in a meeting with staff members that he had not read the essay before it was published. That's a no-no. And the paper added an editor's note to the top of the original column, which a couple of tweets pointed out that was sort of changing. It was shifting as days went on. "We've examined the piece and the process leading up to its publication," said Eileen Murphy, a Times spokeswoman. "This review made clear that a rushed editorial process led to the publication of an op-ed that did not meet our standards. As a result, we're planning to examine both short-term and long-term changes to include expanding our fact-checking operation and reducing the number of op-eds we publish. Also, they'll be doing polls regularly to see how many people agree with their opinions or not." Okay, that, I just made that last part up. That's not included in what she said at all. But that's basically what she's saying. They don't want any opinions that would offend a bunch of people. The Daily Beast reported, well, at least not certain people. The Daily Beast reported that top editors apologized to Times staff in a long, tense internal meeting, acknowledging that Cotton, this is the senator who wrote the op-ed, had been invited to write the column. The New York Times invited Cotton to write the column. This is insane. Bennett said he was sorry for the pain that this particular piece has caused. President Donald Trump quickly weighed in on Bennett's resignation, quoting, this is his tweet, opinion editor at New York Times just walked out. That's right, he quit over the excellent op-ed penned by our great Senator Tom Cotton. Transparency, all caps, exclamation. The state of Arkansas is very proud of Tom. The New York Times is fake news, exclamation point, exclamation point, exclamation point. A short while later, Cotton retweeted the president and took offense at media headlines asserting that he had called for military force against protesters. This is false and offensive, he tweeted. I called for using military force as a backup only if police are overwhelmed to stop riots, not to be used against protesters. If New York Times has any decency left, they should retract this smear. The Sunday announcement from the Times came a day after Stan Wyszowski, the top editor of the Philadelphia Inquirer, said he would resign following criticism for publishing the headline, Buildings Matter Too. You see what he did there? Yeah, Wyszowski, editor at the Philadelphia Inquirer, sort of, you know, riffed off of Me Too, Buildings Matter Too, you know. The controversy led to a public apology from him and dozens of papers. Journalists of color called in sick and tired of not being heard. Oh, this is all kinds of crazy. You can't do that, Mr. Stan of the Philadelphia Inquirer. You can't take those things like Me Too and apply them to buildings. No, you can't do that. That's illegal. Illegal motion. Foul. You have to resign. You're canceled. Clearly, the problem is not that certain journalists are not being heard. The problem is that only certain voices are allowed to be heard. Other journalists had the audacity to point out that a lack of true diversity of voices, including Republican ones, is a shift from the longtime goal of journalistic objectivity. You know, that used to be a goal of journalism. What is truth? Isn't that what journalism is all about? I'm not at all enthusiastic about calling in the military. I'm not. But when retired police captains are being murdered in cold blood in the streets during rioting, I don't think that's an insane idea. I don't want the military to be called in, but I think senators are entitled to that opinion. But apparently it's perfectly fine to have the opposite opinion. 9 members of Minneapolis' city council, which is a veto-proof majority, announced their intention on Sunday to disband the city's police department, vowing to replace it with a, quote, new model of public safety. So what does that mean exactly? No one really knows. Oh, it's hilarious. Some proposals focus on increasing funding for social workers. Like, that's a great idea. Community programs and, get this, peace circles. I didn't even click on it. I don't even know. Peace circles, people. That's what we need. Peace circles. While others call for the complete abolition of police departments. But the idea is spreading. So, for example, D.C. Mayor Muriel Bowser had the words Black Lives Matter painted in gigantic block letters onto 16th Street, which is just down from the White House in Washington, D.C. Then, over the weekend, protesters added an equals sign at the end and the words defund the police. So, you know, the idea is spreading. It's getting popular. Will Lloyd at The Spectator reports, trying to shed some light on all of this. Many Americans, let alone conservatives, would probably have scoffed at Miriam Caba until a few weeks ago. She's an activist and organizer. Caba is representative of the theorists who have been laying the groundwork for police abolition for years. In Chicago, where she arrived for graduate school in 1995, Caba was the leading voice of the abolition movement, again here, the abolition of the police force, for over 2 decades. She told an interviewer that when she first arrived, there were no abolitionist organizations in the city. By the early 2000s, Incite, with an exclamation point, an activist group founded by Caba, began to host national conferences that brought together intellectuals and organizers, including Angela Davis, to work out what abolitionist ideas would mean in practice. Caba wants both police and prisons abolished. Abolition is not about changing one thing, she says. It's about changing everything together. Everything. Why focus on Kaba, who appears to have walked fully formed out of the pages of a Tom Wolfe novel? Again, this is the Spectator article. It's because ideas that activists like her have been producing are the ones being picked up by The Atlantic, The New York Times, Vox, and Time magazine in the wake of George Floyd's killing. What would Kaba's post-prison, post-cop world look like? Kaba advocates restorative justice. She explained the idea to Chris Hayes last year. This is what she said in an interview. It's a very different model than the adversarial system that we currently have where harms occur and the state intervenes. Adversarial system. In this case, the idea is that you have a community of people who will intervene, and so they ask usually a set of questions. Because the idea of restorative justice is that harms engender needs and that those needs should be met. And the issue is, who's going to meet the needs and how will people meet those needs? The author of the article says, clear now? What? Restorative justice draws on pre-modern conceptions of conflict resolution, such as peace circles, as an alternative to police and prisons. Kaba argues that the latter are not only corrupted by systemic racism, but they are actually unnatural, a kind of historical accident. Indigenous people didn't need police, Kaba says, so why do we? Right, because they just did human sacrifice. The Aztecs, they didn't have police, right? These ideas have been taken up rapidly during the protests. Under the headline, No More Money for the Police, two writers in the Times envision the replacement of cops with healthcare workers or emergency response teams, rapid response social workers, conflict interrupters, and restorative justice teams and community organizers. Writing for Time, Minneapolis City Council member Steve Fletcher believes that the police must be disbanded. We can invest in cultural competency and mental health training. Oh my goodness. De-escalation and conflict resolution. Fellow council member Jeremiah Ellison tweeted, we are going to dismantle the Minneapolis Police Department, and when we're done, we're not simply going to glue it back together. We're going to dramatically rethink how we approach public safety and emergency response. In New York and LA, cuts to policing budgets have already been announced. Dismantling the police will require reallocating their budget and assets to support real solutions to community desperation. Good, well-paying jobs, affordable housing, healthy food, empowering education, accessible healthcare, removal of toxins, ending the brutal police system is, by necessity, a program for a more just and resilient society. Sorry, resilient city. This is what people do. They're going to fix everything. We are going to abolish this, and we are going to fix everything. That's the thinking here. This is the insanity of Marxism, basically. Basically, we're going to nuke it. And when we nuke it, we're not going to glue it back together. We're going to fix everything. Everything. Affordable housing, well-paying jobs. You're also going to be better looking, and you're also going to be 10 pounds lighter. That's what we're promising. Interestingly, there really isn't a huge role for police in the Bible. The civil magistrate is given the sword for punishing evildoers, which is kind of an adversarial relationship, by the way. If you're a murderer, I want you to have an adversarial relationship with the magistrate, and you need to die. Sorry. But there is far too much policing. We do live in a police state. There's far too much policing of free, law-abiding citizens in general. So the problem isn't really with calls to defund or minimize police forces. I'm actually sympathetic. The problem is what liberals will replace them with. Did you hear all those things they want to replace them with? The only thing worse than a police state is a bureaucratic totalitarian state. A militarized police force is a problem from a Christian perspective, but so is a militarized social services, right? That's just what I want, is the CPS with the authority of the police, a militarized nanny state. And then what happens when there are no police departments and whenever everything goes completely nuts and somebody has the audacity to suggest calling in the military? Of course, it won't be a Republican. It'll be like Ta-Nehisi Coates or, some woke priest like that. Pretty soon, that's all we have. At least local law enforcement lives in the community. At least you know where the police chief lives. at least there's some measure of accountability. But until we recognize that we need an objective standard for justice, all of these calls are so many blind squirrels chattering about where the nuts are. This is Toby Sumter with Cross Politic News. You can find this and all our shows at crosspolitic.com or fightlaughfeast.com or on our app, which you can download in your favorite app store. Just search fightlaughfeast.com. Join, become a member, support Rowdy Christian Media. Let's just sink the New York Times, shall we? If you join right now, you can get a Fight Laugh Feast t-shirt. You also get $100 off our registration for our first annual Fight Laugh Feast conference, which I already told you about, which you should have already signed up for. So go to fightlaughfeast.com now and register today.